This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 79. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching startups, whether you've built your first one or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. It's MicroConf Day. What's the word this week, Mike?
Beer makes you smarter.
Wait, what? I'm confused.
I saw this article, and it basically said that beer makes you smarter, and it was based on, pretty sure it was a formal study from the University of Illinois at Chicago. And they basically took 40 participants and took 20 of them and gave them a couple of beers before putting them into this game, and then challenged them to, they'd give them three words in a series, and then they would challenge them to name a fourth word. And the people who had a couple of beers were dramatically better at naming that fourth word than the people who hadn't.
Right. So it doesn't actually make you smarter. It makes you better at this very specific task.
Yeah, it was. They actually thought that it had a lot to do with coming up with ideas. If you have a couple of drinks, then there's something about the way that, you know, the chemicals react within your brain that make you better at problem solving. I saw a variation of this particular article someplace else that had some different theories on it. So there was nothing actually concrete on it, and I'm sure that it would take much more studies, which I would be more than happy to partake in. But
this falls in line with something I read years ago and something I've done quite a bit, is when I want to sit down and do writing and I really want to get a lot done, and tend to, in the evenings especially, I will have one to two glasses of red wine to help me do the first draft and just get it out unedited. And then when I revise, I will tend to want to be more amped and really into the material, more detail oriented. And that's when I do like a cup of coffee or some kind of caffeine. And I had read years ago that it's like one glass of red wine to write, one glass of coffee or a cup of coffee to revise. And now I'm seeing other people. I think Tim Ferriss was on a TV show the other day called A Day in the Life on Hulu. And he does the same thing. He's basically like, I have one to two glasses of red wine in the evening right before I start my writing. I thought it was clever. So this fits into that, right? It's that whole creativity and kind of left brain versus right brain, like activating certain sensors, I'm sure is what it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that I've been able to, like, if I have a couple of beers, I'll be sitting there writing code and stuff, and I haven't measured it, but I feel like I'm a lot more productive. Could be just the beer talk.
Right.
As you were saying, today's MicroConf. What's the word on your end?
Today is MicroConf. We obviously recorded a week earlier. Actually is going live on the day that the MicroConf is happening. So hopefully we're having fun right now and everything's going well. There may be a week off next week, and then the week after we'll come back with our MicroConf wrap-up episode. I also wanted to give a shout out to Steve at digitaltoolfactory.net, and actually a thanks, because he talked about one of our episodes, and he basically said, I love the title, Startups for the Rest of Us has the greatest quote ever on entrepreneurship. And the quote was from a couple episodes ago, and it was, employees complain, entrepreneurs get it done. That was cool. Thanks for quoting us there, Steve. And then the other thing, there were several comments on episodes 77 and 78. These are on the actual blog site, startupsfortherestofus.com. And Justin Jackson said a couple things based on, we were talking about forums and CRM software and such. And he reminded us that Basecamp isn't CRM software. It's HireRise that's a CRM software. Basecamp is project management. So we just misspoke there. And then the other thing he said is that we're making assumptions about visiting a competitor who has an outdated website. He said that they just updated their site, which they haven't really touched since 2004. What were they doing? Serving customers. Our business was growing so fast from referrals, they literally didn't have time to update it. So they're at industrymailout.com. And I have some thoughts on that, because I think it depends on whether your market is online or offline,
right,
as to whether you can tell, you know, if that business is really hitting it and whether you can outmarket them online. If their site really is old and they're growing by referral, that's good for them. But if there is demand online and they're not going after it, I do still think that what you said, which was, you know, old sites can be an indicator that they've kind of checked out their online marketing, then I think there could be room for you.
Yeah. And again, I mean, that list that we talked about was just things that you can look at. I mean, not any single one of them is going to be concrete proof that you're going to be able to evaluate them effectively. I mean, you really have to combine a bunch of different things before you can come to those decisions. But again, it goes back to beating them online. And if their site hasn't been updated, it doesn't matter how well they're doing offline. You know, the fact is you should be able to beat them with the online marketing. But he does bring up a very valid point that if they're doing great business offline, then it probably doesn't take much more than a site redesign for them to kind of bump themselves up in the search engine rankings, especially if they've had a site for a while.
Yeah, so thanks, Justin, for that comment. We appreciate everyone who's participating, whether they're emailing us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com, calling into our voicemail number at 888-801-9690, or posting to the blog.
Are you front-loading that stuff now?
Hey, so one final comment. This was on episode 78, and it was by Mark Stevens. This was the episode titled Things You Should Give Up. And he said, one thing I would add to your list of things to give up, especially for startups, is to give up the need for everything to be perfect. Some things just need to be okay, and you can then focus your efforts for perfection where it matters. Jeffrey Moore did a brilliant talk on this a few years ago at Business of Software.
That's a fantastic point.
I know.
It really is.
That's a good one. Yeah, we should have, maybe if we had time, we could have added a few more to the list, but I second that thought.
Today, we're going to be talking about the top five reasons that your business will fail. When you talk about startups, the issues of success and failure tend to come up. And what we're going to be focusing today on is business failure rather than product failure. There's nothing inherently wrong with your product idea failing, but when the business itself fails, there's fundamental flaws in the execution of the business and the business going after certain products. So that's kind of the gist of what we're trying to get at today is there's a difference between product failure and business failure, and we're focusing today on business failure.
Are you talking about like if a business has multiple products that one of them can fail, or are you talking about just a single product not working doesn't mean that your business fails? You can launch another one?
Yeah, sort of. So if you start a business and you start pursuing a product and that product fails for whatever reason, you can pivot and go to a new product, or you can launch a variation of that product or a completely new product, and your business hasn't failed. But the product has, but that's okay. I mean, building and launching products is kind of a process that you have to go through, and some products are going to do well and some of them aren't. But you obviously want to minimize the product failures as much as possible, because that minimizes the amount of time that you have to, I guess, meander through business trying to figure out which products are going to do well and keep you in business and which ones aren't. But if you have fundamental flaws in your business and the execution of the plans for those different products, then you're going to have much more serious issues. And it doesn't matter what product you have, then you're eventually going to fail because the business itself fails. It's not necessarily the product failing.
Yeah, let's dive in.
The first reason that businesses will fail is because you don't actually get started. And this one, I think a lot of people fall into this. Too many people spend too much time building up the idea of a business rather than actually building the business itself. And we talked about some of these things back in episode 71, where we talked about all the different things that you shouldn't pay for early on in the business. And by doing all of those things, instead of trying to build a business and build the products that you need to launch, then you're never actually building the business itself.
Yeah, this reminds me, I published a post a couple years ago now, probably, and it was called Lesser Known Traits of Successful Founders or something. And one of the traits that I listed was how quickly do you respond to opportunity? And I feel like that has a lot to do with people who I've seen succeed, right? There's a difference between sitting with a notebook and making lists of 10, 20, 50 business ideas over the course of many years, which I used to do, and I think a lot of wannabe founders are guilty of doing. And I don't say wannabe in a negative way. I really just mean people who want to start companies think that it's more about, you know, having a bunch of ideas and really thinking them through too far before you actually just start putting some feet on the ground and you start talking to customers and getting an idea if people want to do it. I'm actually, you know, in typical entrepreneur fashion, I have my notebook, and even in the last week, I've been adding new business ideas, new product ideas to it as I've read a few essays that have got me thinking. And already I'm looking at them and saying, what can I do this week or next week, maybe after MicroConf, that can give me an idea of whether or not these will succeed without me mulling them over for 6 months like I used to? Over analysis is just, it's so painful, and it's so common, I think, with a lot of us.
Something else that goes along with that you didn't directly mention was spending too much time trying to think of the perfect idea, because it's going to be really difficult to find the perfect idea these days. I mean, you've mentioned it a number of times on previous podcasts where the best time to start a business was 5 years ago and the next best time was 4 years ago. I mean, you just need to get started. And if you're not getting started, then you're never going to get anywhere. So number two on the list is giving up too early. this is almost the opposite of not getting started. It's just giving up way too early. When you run into hard times, you basically have two options. You have to either give up or you push through. And it's a lot easier to give up than to push through those hard times.
This is a very tough question to answer of whether or not you should give up or push through when you hit a roadblock. And I've actually been having conversations with a few different entrepreneurs over the past couple of months, guys who are just getting started. They're early in their idea phase. Some of them have written code, launched, and then got their initial customer base and realized that they needed to pivot. Basically, that it wasn't a viable business, even though, you know, their market research showed that it was. There's obviously a lot of uncertainty. I would say there's a lot of art in there being an entrepreneur. But others are still in the idea phase. And the question that comes up most often is, when should I dump this idea? There's no answer, right? I mean, it depends. There's no one answer. The biggest realization that I've had as I've talked to these guys is that sitting there, having them go off and do some research, pound out the numbers, give it some thought, talk to some customers, and then come back to me and have a conversation for me to then try to get to the meat of the question has worked out really well. And the reason is because the person doing, the entrepreneur doing the research is too close to the problem. They can't actually see the forest for the trees. And I'm removed enough from it. I haven't done all the research. I haven't spent all the hours in it, that I'm basically able to ask these, the key questions, and we can sit there together and obviously not making the decision for these guys, but to kind of push them in a direction of doing some more research or maybe think about whether they are really passionate about the idea. And almost, there's almost never a yes or no. It's almost always comes down to, if you're really passionate about this and you really think it can succeed, then even though some of these signs are saying no, you should do it. And then on the flip side, there are even some minor roadblocks here and you just kind of aren't that interested in the idea. Maybe you found out that the idea is viable and there is a market for it, but it's going to require a lot of, say, cold calling or in-person sales, and you just are not sure you want to do that. Then maybe, even though it could be a viable business, maybe you should think about not doing it. And that's typically where it winds up, right? It winds up being a personal choice because it's almost never a yes or no. It's more often than not a weighing of different positive and negative factors. And getting that list of positive and negative factors onto a piece of paper is challenging. But I really recommend the two-person approach that we've kind of stumbled upon here in the past few months.
And just to be clear, what you've said so far is completely focused on giving up or not, as opposed to taking the product and pivoting, right?
Yeah, that's right. So that's also been part of the conversation. These days, I would never, almost never tell an entrepreneur to totally give up. Like, unless you really don't want to be a founder anymore, to me, that's when you give up. But almost in almost all cases, it's been pivoting the thing. And even, you know, one guy like pivoted from something to help with documentation, and he was almost pivoting, going to pivot like into a completely different vertical. But there was at least some code base he was going to reuse, and there was some knowledge that he had learned about how businesses make purchasing decisions that he had learned by talking to some initial prospects and the couple of customers that did purchase from him. So it's really, I guess I've heard the phrase like a pivot is just a, you know, a switch to another product idea. And a leap, I think, is when you really, you probably keep the same company shell, but you just almost revamp the product entirely, maybe move into a completely different product. So I think if we say that giving up is doing a leap or doing a pivot, then that's more of what I've been talking about. I haven't been telling anyone to give up being a founder.
The number three on this list was being unable to pivot. But again, going back to the original topic for this particular podcast, it was giving up too early on the business, not necessarily on a product. Because products, you can obviously give up on a product because, as you said, it just doesn't appeal to you anymore. But if business itself and running a business doesn't appeal to you anymore, then that's, I would say, a much more serious fundamental issue than just not being interested in a product.
Yeah, this actually relates back to another one of those lesser known traits of successful founders that I mentioned, and it's how flexible are you? You know, if you're married to a product idea or a business idea and you've been following it in your head for years, it's hard to let it go. You become married to it, and that's a real danger, especially with how quickly things move these days. And so having the flexibility to just say, I've built this awesome, you know, whatever it is, a CMS or invoicing software, and it's totally not working out in this vertical, and I'm just going to switch, and I'm going to now do it for mortgage brokers. To be able to do that, if it's the right business decision, can be a real indicator of whether or not you're going to succeed as a founder. I think every startup story that you read involves several adjustments to the vision. And even though you read and you think, oh, PayPal and Netflix and all these companies that achieve big success were that from the start. Facebook's the same way. When you really read the story and you get into it and you hear the founders talking about it, they almost all started as pretty different ideas than they eventually wound up. And the founders were smart enough to notice that they needed to change course. And they had the flexibility and the willingness to perhaps give a part of their initial vision or all of their initial vision when they realized that, you know, another part of the business was essentially taking off.
So number four on the list is you don't make the business a priority. And I think this trap is really easy to fall into for a lot of people, especially when you're first getting started, because you'll always have time down the road. And if you keep telling yourself that there will be time later, I'll get to it, and you don't make time for the business, if you don't make the business itself a priority for yourself, it's just never going to happen. I mean, you really need to buckle down and execute on things, because that's insanely important for being successful.
I think a big question that, you know, you should ask yourself if you're getting started is, can you focus long enough to deliver? Are you focusing on the business, or are you letting other things become a priority? We've talked about in the past about how it's really fun to watch TV and go hang out with friends at happy hour, but those friends typically aren't the ones that are starting a business on the side. And so if you have a 9-to-5 and you want to start a business and you want to go out every night, something has to give. The other thing I'm seeing is the pace of innovation and the pace of how fast things are moving, it feels to me like it's accelerating even more. Even in boring niches where there was no competition 5-7 years ago, there is starting to be some competition. And then as you edge into even minorly interesting niches, there's a lot more competition than there was a couple years ago. And then as you get into the big hot tech areas, you look at things like Pinterest or any type of Facebook or location-based mobile apps, all that stuff. Like if you wait 30 days, the landscape has changed substantially enough that if you have not acted quickly and gotten something out, you may have missed the boat. It's that fast. Like, it's a matter of months before the really hot niches are changing. And we don't necessarily recommend getting into the hot niches because they do change so fast and they tend to have people working 24/7 on them who've raised funding and all kinds of stuff. But as I said, this trickles all the way down. And even in the medium to low interest niches that aren't that sexy, they're changing so fast that you really need to think about how quickly you can move and get to market these days.
And the last reason your business will fail is because you aren't building processes for your business. This goes back more to making sure that you're building things that can be repeated. You know, you need to build a business process for handling whatever it is so that it can be handed off to somebody else to be repeated. And that comes to just about anything, whether it's your sales process, your funnels, the code itself. I mean, what you're trying to do when you're building your business is build processes that can be followed that can later be scaled. And by scaled, I mean either hand them off to somebody else so that one other person does them, or you hand it off to a computer. But then you take those things and you can essentially offload them from yourself so that you can concentrate on other things.
Have you heard the term earnout?
I have heard the term. I don't recall specifically what it is.
So an earnout is if you sell your business and the acquiring company makes you stick around for what's called an earnout.
Ah, so yes.
You get some of the money up front, and then if you stick around for 2 years, you get another big check, or 1 year, you know, whatever the term they decide is. And I was actually talking to a founder whose business got acquired probably about a year ago now. I was just emailing with him this week, and he said that they had so many processes in place and so much of the stuff was, I won't say automated, but it was basically documented. And enough was automated that he was able to walk away with the holy grail of acquisitions, which is where you get your money and you walk away the day the sale closes. And that's very rare. The thing is these processes, they don't just make your life easier while you're running your business. They actually make you way more attractive to an acquiring company if you ever want to sell it. And it will basically increase your revenue, your income per hour worked. Because the more you automate, the less you have to work in your business and the more you can really, you know, work on your business, as Michael Gerber says. There's a good book called Built to Sell. It's told as like a parable, like just a story of this guy who's selling his business. And when I first started listening to it, I kind of groaned like, this is going to be terribly cheesy. But it turns out that by the end, I was really rooting for the guy in the story. The author covers things that you should do if you ever plan on selling your business and how to make it more saleable, and talks about getting repeatable processes and getting paid in advance and having recurring revenue and being specialized and just some things like that. It's a pretty short book. It's worth a read. But the most important thing I took away from it is, even if I don't want to sell my businesses, all of the things he says in there are ways to make your business more efficient and just make it a better business for you to run so that you can spend your time doing things that are more interesting to you. That could include maybe potentially, you know, starting, launching another product line or doing something else that is fun. I mean, as entrepreneurs, we're creators and we want to do that new stuff. And so you don't want to sit there day to day doing things that you could essentially just build processes for and hand off to other people feasibly.
Yeah, and everything that you said was kind of the whole point of that is, you know, if you're putting these processes in place, then those processes can be followed by you, but they could be followed by somebody else or by one or more people that just scale out and they help make your business that much more profitable so that you're working, as you said, on your business as opposed to in it.
So, hey, Mike, I want to add one other. I know we said top five reasons, but one occurred to me as we were talking. And it's one, we've definitely covered this before because it's more of a psychological or a mindset one. But the question I throw out is, do you have confidence in your ability to execute? The question is not, can you execute? Because I believe most people can execute on ideas and most people can eventually be successful if they work hard enough at it and try enough ideas that it'll eventually happen. The question is, do you have confidence in your ability to execute? Do you really believe that you can do this? And are you going to stick around after the first 6 month lull, you know, where your sales drop? Do you believe that you can correct that? Because if you don't, then the odds are that you are going to do number two, which was give up too early. Because the less confidence you have in your ability to execute, then the more likely you're going to be to basically close up shop.
Yeah, I found that with things that I'm either not interested in doing or that I feel like I don't have the ability or knowledge to do it, I tend to procrastinate with those things and put them off. In a way, that's not much different than just giving up. I mean, it's amazing how little time that it actually takes once I've made those decisions to buckle down and do it. There was something I was trying to get through, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I kept putting it off and putting it off. And then finally I just said, look, I got to get this done. And I just sat down and did it, and it took me like 2 hours to do.
Yeah, I have those all the time. It's so frustrating. It is crazy, huh? When you're gifted at something or when you're skilled at it, like writing code, I think that's why we all fall into the developer's trap of, I can write code, so I'm going to go build the product because that's what I know how to do. Whereas the marketing stuff, talking to customers, market research, whatever, you know, all these other things that go into building the product that may in fact be more involved with the success of the product than the actual code you're going to write, we ignore that because we procrastinate. I don't think we do it on purpose as much as just maybe not having confidence in our ability to execute on those things or feeling like you're wasting time because learning is time consuming. I mean, if you go out and start talking to customers and you're not very good at it, you almost feel like, oh, I'm just wasting my time. I could be back home, you know, just writing tens of thousands of lines of code. It's so much more efficient. But I mean, as we know, it's like, yeah, it's efficient unless you're building something no one wants. And the only way you're going to find out if they want it is by talking to those customers.
You know, that's one of the challenges that you kind of have to overcome is just buckling down and working through those tough times. Or do you have confidence in your ability to actually execute on those things?
I think what's interesting is you don't necessarily have to have like the utmost confidence in, I am a brilliant marketer if you've never done it, you know, or I am great at customer development if you've never done it. But do you have a confidence in your ability to go learn those things?
I almost wouldn't say that it even comes to that. I would almost say that it comes down to your ability and willingness to go out on a limb and actually make an attempt. And if you're making an attempt, then chances are good that you're probably doing more than the guy next to you.
Yeah, right. 1 year of reading Hacker News articles is probably equivalent to 2 weeks of actually launching a startup, right? I mean, I'm making up numbers here, but it's something like that. It's like 100-to-1 ratio of the amount of progress and learning and understanding you will achieve by actually doing it and failing than you would by just reading about other people doing it and failing.
Or just being mediocre at it. I mean, you don't even have to be the best in the world at it as long as you're actually trying it and you're making progress. I mean, that's the important thing is that you're making progress towards those things.
Yeah. And if you look back at anyone's story, yours and mine included, I had a number, I think I'd never actually set the timeline out until I was on Mixergy a couple months ago, but it was like I had 5 or 6 failed ideas that I actually launched. I had 10 more that I never even saw the light of day that I didn't mention. But I had a number that I spent months and months building and then launched, and they failed before I had my first success. And you even look at these gaming companies that have sold for hundreds of millions recently, but bottom line is like OMG Pop, which sold for 100-something million, they had nothing in the bank. Like the dude had just laid off half of his staff and he had $1,800 in the bank. And they had been around for 6 years and had 15 failed games. And then this one was the fastest growing iPhone app ever. terms of downloads. Now, that's hitting the startup lottery in a way and getting acquired. But the bottom line is, if he didn't have skin in the game and if he didn't keep coming back at it and have some failures, you know, that wouldn't have happened. And the same thing with Rovio. Rovio had over, or at least 50 games and mobile games and that kind of stuff. And by all accounts, they were not doing that well before Angry Birds. And then Angry Birds is, you know, it's basically a multi-billion dollar franchise now. They're doing a TV show. They're doing a movie based on Angry Birds. All the licensing. My kid has gummy Angry Birds that he bought at the candy store. I mean, they're going all out on this thing. And again, I'm not saying, oh, do this and you will have $1 billion, because that's not the goal. The realization is, these guys failed a lot, just like all of us have. Very, very few entrepreneurs come out of the gate and hit it big their first time. Every entrepreneur I talk to has had failed ideas before they succeed.
Yeah, and even if you look at the, I don't want to say the gold standard of, you know, entrepreneurs, you know, a lot of the high profile bloggers that you've probably read over the years, Fog Creek at Joel Spolsky at the helm. What was one of their first products? It was, I think, CityDesk, I believe.
CityDesk, yep. It was like a CMS.
Yeah, and that thing failed. I ended up buying it at one point because I wanted to see what it was like, and, you know, started using it for my blog for a while. And then I was just like, yeah, this just isn't cutting it. It's not working out the way that I want it to. But, you know, that's one of those examples where you look at somebody like him and say, well, you know, he's done all these things over the years. How could he have possibly gone wrong? He worked at Microsoft. But that right there is one of those failures that, you know, nobody talks about. And I think it's important to realize that everyone has those failures. It's just a matter of how you react to them. So I think that about wraps us up. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons.
Hey, did you know there's a live version of We're Out of Control by Moot on YouTube?
I did not.
We should totally look it up. So yeah, I've been seeing it on Twitter. Some people were like, they were mentioning that there's a live version of We're Out of Control on Spotify. I went on YouTube and searched for it, and they're performing it live. Like, it's kind of cool to hear it. Of course, to listen to the verse, because we never actually play that part. Yeah, so we'll link it up in the show notes, and people can just search YouTube for Moot or Out of Control to see that video.
And you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching for Startups or via RSS at startupsforrestofus.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.